Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Okay, continuing Sarvasamvadini. Nanu Arvagyajana Samvadadi Darshanat Katam Tasyanadi Twadi Uchyate Ata Eva Chanityatvam Ityatra Sutre Shankara Shadiraka Bhashya Pramanitayam Shutau Shuyate Yagena Vacha Padaviyam ayan tam anvavindan vishishu pravishtam iti. Smritaucha yugante tarhitan vedan setihasan maharshayaha lebide tapasa purvam anugyatak svayambhuva. Still, how can you qualify the Vedas as beginningless and so on when we see in them such things as conversations among recent persons? Our answer is that in Shankara's Sharirika Bhashya, where he comments on the sutra, therefore it is eternal, that's the sutra, we hear the statement cited from Shruti, by performance of sacrifice, the words of the Vedas manifested this form, which became fulfilled when they entered within the sages. And we find in the Smriti, in accord with a promise made by self-born Brahma, the great sages, by the power of their penances, received the Vedas and the Itihasas, which had disappeared at the end of the age. Okay, there's a short commentary. The Vedas are said to transcend time. Yet they describe historical events, including conversations between persons known to have lived at particular times. But in the opinion of Sri Jiva and other Vaishnavas, and also of the impersonalist Shankara and his followers, these conversations and other historical narrations are not records of past events made after the fact. Rather, the Vedas are the prototype upon which the evolution of material creation is modeled in cyclic repetition. The various hymns of the Vedas also seem to have authors. They're rishis or seers. But as explained in the Vedic texts here cited, the rishis are but receivers and transmitters of the eternal sound. Now, let's see, what were those two shrutis that were quoted? By performance of sacrifice, the words of the Vedas manifested this form, which became fulfilled when they entered within the sages. What does that mean? Let's see. Let's go back to the Sanskrit. Yagena vacha padaviyam ayan taman vavindan vishishu pavishtam. Well, I can get from that, that the Vedas are unchanging, eternal. Performance of sacrifice is not going to make any change in the Vedas. We perform sacrifices to effect various changes in our lives. We change our karma by performing yajna. We create good karma, elevation to heaven or whatever. But we're not going to change the Vedas by performing sacrifice. So what is being said here? The Vedas assume this form, or padaviyam, when on this path, by yajna. What it, I take it to mean is that the Vedas are reflected in our own consciousness. We perceive the Vedas differently according to our different attitudes. The Karmakandis see the prescriptions for ritualistic works for gaining material benefits. The Gyanis see something else in the Vedas. They may be reading a certain part of the Vedas, the Upanishads, but the Upanishads are supposed to be an explanation of the whole Veda. All the sacrificial performances are explained in an esoteric way in the Aranyakas and in a more spiritual way in the Upanishads. This is based on the Vedas, this explanation of the Vedas. So the Gyanis, who are students of the Upanishads, are seeing the Vedas in a different light. And what to speak of the Vaishnavas, how they see the Vedas, what they see in them. So by yajna, Vedas assume a certain form. Those who perform yajnas in this consciousness or that consciousness, the Vedas will reflect. That will show themselves in the aspect that these people are interested in. Especially when the rishis become authorities on the Vedas, then our understanding of the Vedas is also flavored by the attitude of the rishis. Someone teaches us Vedas, we will learn Vedas from the point of view of the teacher. So the rishis are teachers of the Vedas, and there are different rishis with different points of view. So we get different views of the Vedas from different rishis. Rishi bhi bahudha gitam, Krishna says in the Gita, that chandobi vividai putap, vividai, various kinds of chandas, and the rishis have explained them in all different ways. Krishna himself gives that opinion. Then there's a smriti. Where is that from? Let me see. Mahabharata, Adi Parva, Yugante Antarhitan Vedan. So, at the end of the Yuga, the great sages received, labire, by their austerities, the Vedas and the Itihasas, which had been Antarhitan. They had disappeared or become hidden. It wasn't creation of the Vedas. The Vedas were there. They never underwent any change. They never underwent any real corruption or loss. But they were hidden. So the Maharishis at the end of the age regained the Vedas. Purva Manugyata Swayambhuva. Previously they had been ordered to do so by Lord Brahma. This is their prescribed duty. How could someone be so audacious as to presume that he can see the Vedas and tell us what they are? That he can, in his meditation, catch Vedas out of the sky? How can someone presume to be such an authority when he's ordered to by his guru? Brahma ordered the rishis to do this. Okay, we'll take one or two questions. This is a minor break. Okay, go ahead.
Does it mean that the Vedas assume a form? The statement that the Vedas manifested these forms, of, as you explained, the form refers to Vedas' reflection in the individual consciousness of the receiver?
Yes.
Yeah, so does that mean that receiver can influence Vedas, which...
No, no, see, what it's not that the words are changing. The only thing that changes is the understanding of the meaning of the words. The Vedas have multiple levels of meaning. And one person will tune into one level, and another person will tune into another. Nothing really changes. It's just different perceptions.
So this statement doesn't touch the external, it just touches upon the one's perception of the Vedas,
yes.
Individual, which is inside oneself.
It doesn't talk about any change in the essence or the external form of the Vedas.
Yeah, okay.
Even every syllable stays the same. But the meaning that's understood from it can be different for different people.
We also say that like we have different types of Vedas. Some are spoken more as about the impersonal feature of the Lord. Some speak more about the personal feature of the Lord. And therefore, these different parts of the Vedas are revealed to different rishis who, in their turn, have more inclination towards an impersonal feature or another rishis towards personal feature, and those particular parts of Vedas will be revealed to those.
Yes.
Is there such a reason to say like that?
Yeah. You can say that, but it doesn't make for radical contradictions.
Yeah.
That one part of the Veda is against the other part of the Vedas.
Yeah.
As people have opposing opinions. It's not that the Vedas, who are later taken up by these people, the Vedas are disagreeing with one another. No, the Vedas are a organic whole. When you put everything in context, it's all consistent. There is the impersonal feature, there is the personal feature. They're both there, and they're both part of the whole. And there's no contradiction, there's no opposition of one opinion against another. It's just different aspects of the same truth. If we get into arguments and develop, I'll get you, enmity, you know, against our philosophical opponents, that's our problem. The Vedas don't do that. Yes.
Purvapaksha's question is this, different sages are speaking, so how is it that those sages are eternal? In a sense, it is the Vedas are being spoken by these people, so it should be only produced from them. But the answer which is given here seems like a theoretical answer. In a sense, unless the person is eternal, he cannot prove the existence of that the rishis in the next cycle also they receive the mantras, and consequently every cycle they receive the mantras. So this is also a kind of an axiom, isn't it? The answer to this Purvapaksha is also an axiom, isn't it?
Well, yes. This is our conviction that the Vedas are eternal. Really, the axiom is simply the Vedas are eternal. And then we come up with the other ideas to explain how they can be eternal and also describe historical events. If they were just written after the fact, then they wouldn't be eternal any more than the daily newspaper. But it's not that way. It's the other way around. What the Vedas say are eternal, and the history of the universe follows the pattern established by the Vedas. King Janaka appears and he plays the role that's already been written in the script for him.
So this fact is cannot be perceived or cannot be even thought of. It has to just be accepted, because if a person has to believe this fact, he cannot...
What has to be accepted is that the Vedas are eternal. We can presume that such must be the situation, assuming that the Vedas are eternal. If they're eternal, then the description of historical events must come before the description comes before, not after, if the description is eternal. If the description is eternal, we can logically deduce that it must exist before the apparent historical fact. The historical fact is following the Vedas, not the other way around. That we can tell by logic. We don't have to believe that. We can deduce it. But we have to believe the Vedas are eternal.
Is Purva Paksha is questioning the eternality of the Vedas or
yes, he's a person who doesn't believe the Vedas are eternal, and he's giving an argument that but the Vedas describe historical events. And we say, no, they can be eternal and describe apparently historical events or historical events, and we explain how it's possible. So his Purva Paksha doesn't prove it. The Vedas do describe historical events, we don't deny that. But that's not an argument against their being eternal. Okay, one more and then we continue. What? You want to stay on track? Okay.
It's a small question.
Yeah.
So, history repeats itself in the sense that the same personage, like the history is set.
Yes, it will repeat itself.
It's like the same personage, for example, let's give an example. Mm-hmm. Sukadeva Goswami speaks to Maharaj Parikshit.
It doesn't always see, it repeats it, the cycle, the patterns repeat, but not always the details are the same. It's like, it's not a circle going around the same exact point again. It's a helix, moving down, helix. You know, it's a circular thing, but it moves down and it covers a different place. And it may not be exactly the same shape every time around. All the details aren't the same, but the basic pattern that's fixed by the Vedas, that has to be followed. A helix is a three-dimensional form that's based on a circle, but the circle, the point is moving along a different axis. It's like a circle going around, moving down the street. And so what you get is a curlicue shape. Okay. Yes.
So first we can say that...
Okay. Go ahead. We were supposed to stop. We only read one paragraph and then stopped for questions. So go ahead.
Yeah, but it's important for me at least. So Lord Brahma, he gave an instruction to sages to receive Vedas in their meditation. Is there a same case of Vyasadeva when Narada Muni told him to receive Srimad Bhagavatam in his meditation, because he told that you are eligible to meditate on the Supreme Lord and in this way reveal the scripture?
Yes, it is, because Jiva Goswami reveals that the Bhagavatam actually has the status of Shruti. It is eternal and therefore should be received in such a way, the same as other parts of the Vedas. Mm-hmm. But that's confidential. Publicly, everyone thinks it's another Purana. Yes, Vyasadeva is acting like a Vedic Rishi in receiving the Bhagavatam because it's eternal.
And also, can we presume that in this case, different parts of Vedas, as they were revealed according to instructions of the spiritual master, he saw Atikara of disciple and he told him to reveal some particular part of Vedas, for example, Karma Kanda section or Jnana Kanda section, some particular mantra, because he could see what he's able to reveal to.
Well, it wasn't just the whim of this guru and that guru. Actually, many of the Vedic sages are coming in different families, and which part of the Vedas you study and teach depends on which family you're born in. The shaka, the branch of the Vedas you belong to, is usually determined by birth. So things are arranged by their karma. So the right rishis take birth of the right families. Then the gurus confirm. Okay, yes?
And also the last question.
Yes.
Excuse me. Yes. About Brahma Gayatri Mantra. You know that it's like a mother of Vedas. And according to consciousness or sambandha, which we imply, which we apply to this mantra, we can achieve different results. One can meditate on Brahma Gayatri as in Sovya Savituru, somebody can meditate on Radha Krishna. So is it the same case that original Vedic knowledge is on the highest level, but according to consciousness of one who apply Vedas, he can achieve different results?
Yes. You can, someone with the right consciousness can see pure devotional service in all the Vedas, in every part of the Vedas. But that's a very special vision. And even someone with such vision is still going to be especially interested in the Bhagavatam, even if he can see pure devotional service in all the Vedas. Because what you're going to see is an indirect description of pure devotional service. It's described still more explicitly in the Bhagavatam. So even those who can see Krishna on every page of the Vedas are still going to prefer Srimad Bhagavatam.
Okay.
Now we go on to the next paragraph. Tasman nityasiddhasyaiva vedashabdasya tatra tatra pavesha eva natu tat kartrikata tata cha nadi siddha vedana rupaiva pratikalpam tantan namadi pravrittihi tata hi samana nama rupatvat chavritav apyavirodho darshanat smritescha. What? Okay. What is that? Sorry, let me look for the reference. Vedanta Sutra. Sorry, that's a Vedanta Sutra. Ityatra tatvavada bhasha quidbi srimadvacharyai udvita shutihi Surya Chandramasau Data Yata Purvamakalpayat. And then another Shruti, Tataiva Niyamakale Swaradi Niyamas Tata Tasman Nanidrisham Kwapi Vishwam Etad Bhavishyati. The first one is directly from the Rig Veda, from the Purusha Sukta, isn't it? 10.190 sounds like Purusha Sukta. Surya Chandramasa Data Yata Purvamakalpayat. No, okay, anyways, the 10th mandala of the Rig Veda. And the second, that verse that comes second, is from the NN. I don't know what NN stands for. I'd have to look at my files. Anyway, it's some Shruti. And then there's a Smriti text. This is all quoted by Madhvacharya to explain that sutra of the Vedanta. This is from Mahabharata again, Adiparva. Anadi nidana nitya vagus shrishta swayambhuva adau vedamayi divya yatak sarvak pravidyaha rishinam namadeyani yascha vedeshu shrishtayaha Vedashabdevya eva dao numerme sav maheshvaraha. It looks like a mistake there. That word yash should be plural, probably. I'm sorry, hold on a second. Not plural? Okay. Now we read the translation. Therefore, the eternally existing sound of the Vedas simply enters these various sages, rather than being created by them. And in each day of Brahma, the Vedas appear with such attributes as the names of these various sages, because that is how the Vedas eternally are. Just like White Yajurveda, there's a Madhyandina. Madhyandina? That is which is that?
Right, but what chakra is that belong to? What Veda? It's white, it's Yajurveda. Madhyandina. And there's another one called Kanva. Two different recensions, or two different shakas of the same Veda. These are names of rishis. Kanva Rishi is the rishi of that recension. So it gets his name, it appears with his name in each day of Brahma. But he didn't write it. He's just a rishi connected with it. Okay, let me continue. And so we have the sutra. Thus, because the names... this is the Vedanta Sutra. Thus, because the names and forms are the same, even in repeated creation, there is no contradiction. This is seen in Shruti and also stated in Smriti. I think the contradiction that the sutra is talking about is the appearance of historical persons in the Vedas. But that's okay. That doesn't contradict the eternality of the Vedas, because somebody appears in every age with the same name. The roles are taken up by various people following the script, and it happens over and over again. This is seen in Shruti and also stated in Smriti. So it's confirmed by statements of Shruti and Smriti. We just read the sutras, the Shrutis and Smritis that Madhvacharya chose as confirmation of this. And for this sutra, Sri Madhvacharya, the author of the Tattvavad, commentary on Vedanta, cites these statements from the Shruti. One is, he created the sun and the moon just as he had before. And the Vedas are also regulated in time and intonation and so on. Therefore, this universe will never fail to be as it is now. So the first statement is a historical event about the creation of the universe, about a creation occurring repeatedly as Lord Brahma had created the sun and the moon in the previous day of Brahma. Now he's creating it again. So the Shruti is saying that, but it's not saying it after the fact. It's saying it eternally. And it happens in accordance with that statement. Brahma does his work obeying the description of the Vedas, following it. And the second statement, the Vedas are regulated in time and intonation. That means not only the syllables can't change, but the meter has to be exactly the same, down to every shortness and longness of syllables, and the intonation of the syllables. In the Vedas, you have three different tones that have to be, that, you know, affect the meaning of the word. Just like in some languages, like Chinese, you have several tones, and they change the meaning of the words. So you have to not only pronounce the right syllable, it has to be exactly the right meter and exactly the right intonation, and it cannot change. Vedas are unchanging, eternal. Because the Vedas are so fixed down to the last intonation, therefore, the universe is not going to fail to be as it is now. The basic pattern of the history of the universe is going to be followed, because that pattern is established by the unchanging Vedas. Details can change, especially the details that aren't mentioned by the Vedas. But the basic pattern established by the Vedas must be followed, and it will be followed over and over again forever. And then the Shruti, Mahabharata, says, in the beginning the self-born Lord, I have lowercase, so that must be Brahma, sent forth speech, beginningless and eternal. That's the sound of the Vedas. Eternal and divine. She is the source of the Vedas. From her everything proceeds. That's the goddess Saraswati. Simply from the words of the Vedas, the great Lord produced in the beginning the names of the sages and all the varieties of creation mentioned in the Vedas. So this is how Brahma does his work. He has a blueprint. He's not free, just like a contractor who's going to build a house. He's not free to build the house any way he wants. he has to follow the blueprints. He's been hired to bring the blueprints into realization, not to be creative and make his own kind of vows. So like that, Brahma is the contractor. He has to follow the blueprints of the Vedas, the names of the sages, all the variety, the different varieties of creation. Whatever is specified in the Vedas, he has to follow. Whatever is not specified, he has some liberty to use his own choice. Question? Yes.
Can you give an example of a principle that doesn't change and of a detail that changes?
Lord Vamanadeva appears in every manvantara. Rupa Goswami tells us that. I don't know where he got that information. Maybe from some scripture, maybe he just realized it. That's authoritative fact, that there is an appearance of Vamanadeva in every day, every manvantara, which is quite frequent. But what he does, and exactly what is the relationship between him and Bali Maharaj, that varies. Or even some, it may not involve Bali Maharaj, it may involve somebody else. It does sometimes. He does a similar thing with somebody else than Bali sometimes. So the details change. And you can read in seven different Puranas, seven different versions of Lord Vamana's pastimes. Because they occur often and they don't occur exactly the same. The appearance of Vamana is fixed, but the details, there's a lot of variance. Okay? Yes, Madam Mahaprabhu.
How to combine eternality of the Vedas with their mentioning or referring to contemporary people? There's a Bhrigu Samhita which Prabhupada refers to. And that Bhrigu Samhita supposedly refers, so it has descriptions of all people's lives for eternity. In other words, whoever goes to there, I think somebody already see when there, Bhrigu Muni, Bhrigu Pandit, and they can get their charts, not just calculated but pulled out from a stock of paper, which is supposed to be eternal Bhrigu Samhita and describes all people for all times. So is it, can we quote it as an example of how the Vedas can combine eternality and being
well content? Only that the Bhrigu Samhita is not Shruti. It doesn't have the authority of Shruti.
Doesn't have that authority.
Did Prabhupada even verify the existence of the Bhrigu?
He did.
He did?
A couple of times.
He did say. Okay. He didn't say that what this particular pundit in this village in Rajasthan has is the real Bhrigu. He didn't say who has the real
He
Bhrigu
says there are people in Vedas in
India. No, he says it exists. Yeah. There is, but he didn't say who has it.
Okay, yeah.
A lot of people claim to have it.
Well, as a principle that such scriptures do exist and acharyas support, it means that even though it's not a smriti, it's a smriti, still it has eternal authority. Even though it was not written after our birth, it was written before it, way before, but still it accurately describes some basic points of our birth.
Well, it has authority that goes beyond the ordinary limits of past, present, and future.
Yes.
Whoever compiled that, put in the horoscopes of people in the future, and supposedly everybody who will ever come and ask to see their horoscope, it'll be there.
Yes.
Okay, so there's vision into the future involved in that compilation, but that's not eternal. That's not eternal. It doesn't mean that whoever compiled it could see all the way back to the infinite time. It just means he could see somewhat into the future. Relatively, from our point of view, it sounds like eternal, but it's just relatively, beyond the ordinary scopes of time.
Well, as I said, it's like a helix.
But it's not. I mean, the Vedas are absolutely eternal. There's no limit to their scope of authority. A book like this, Bhrigu Samhita has an expanded scope of authority, but not infinite.
We may say it's like a spin-off of the Vedas, which has its origin at some particular point of time. But the potency of the Vedas to describe accurately or
right. But when you get a spin-off of the Vedas composed by a rishi, the authority of it depends on the authority of the rishi.
Yeah.
You know, the bogus scriptures of heretical views are also spins off from the Vedas, but done by disreputable,
yes,
so-called rishis.
But this is just an example how we could even explain to people, give an example of yes, how such things could
yes,
be.
Yes, but it's an analogous. It's just analogous.
Yeah, an analogy.
Yeah. It's not Veda. It's not Vedas, really. Okay. Yes. Because some people, you tell them this, they're fascinated, and then they become devotees of the Bhrigu Samhita instead of devotees of Krishna.
So here, this shows that all the rishis, the different sages, and all of them mentioned are just like the positions or the post that a living entity goes through in different bodies, like different posts, as Madhvacharya calls in this Taratamya, there's different levels of living entities.
Yes.
So that means that whatever exists in the universe is just a post. And when the living entity advances its consciousness from one post to another post to another, then revelations are different.
The material world is just composed of names and forms. Everything material is just an imitation. It's not the real thing. Nothing in the material world is the real thing. It's just it's a copy. Nakli. It's a copy. It's an imitation. Everything in the material world, the names and forms, are all imitations of realities that exist in the spiritual world. But those who come in contact with Krishna and devotional service, they're contacting the reality. And what is produced from pure devotional service is real. But everything else in the material world is just an imitation.
So that means that like this Bhrigu and Janaka and all of them are just names. And after next yuga or next manvantara, different person will be in the body of Janaka,
yeah,
or different.
Yeah.
But what about like the living entity called Janaka, who was the father of Sita and who was a great devotee? So that.
No, but as Bhrigu, he's just occupying the post, and someone else will occupy it another time. But Bhrigu, as a Vaishnava, his relationship with the Supreme Lord, with his Ishtadeva, that's real. Not his role, his identity as one of the Saptarishis. That's not eternally real. But his identity as servant of the Supreme Lord, and how he realized that's real and eternal.
So the subsequent Bhrigus who will be coming may not be devotee also. Like subsequent Janakas,
yes,
may not be devotee.
Yes.
So that living entity may have some other name form in the spiritual world. He may assume this form in the material world. Is it?
Yes. Yes.
Janaka Maharaj, in the case with Janaka Maharaj, since Ramalila is eternal and Rama's associates are eternal, we cannot say
The father-in-law of Lord Ramachandra, that's a spiritual relationship.
So he is always the same one, same living entity. Because if we accept that this is also a position, I think we will go too far. Position of Janaka.
I'm just wondering whether we can deny Krishna the liberty to let people take turns being his parents. I don't know. You know, Krishna could do that if he wanted to.
Because so far I understand that Krishna's associates who directly perform pastimes with him, these are
eternal
positions occupied by the same ones, living entities.
Okay, I would say yes.
Even when Lila is projected in the
Yes, they're eternal spiritual identities. But Krishna could make an exception if he wanted to. Okay, anything else? Yes.
For example, in the case of Vyasadeva is some certain position. So can we tell also that those sages through whom this Vedic mantras were revealed, it's also like some stable, some fixed positions,
yes,
which some particular living entity just assumes.
In general, yes. There are positions. There's a different Vyas in every Dwapara Yuga. A different person becomes the Vyasa. And there's seven rishis. In every Manvantara, it's a different seven rishis, not even the same names. You want the same names, you don't have to wait, I think, until the next day of Brahma to get the same, you know, get Bhrigu Muni again. Although we read about Bhrigu and other sages in the Swayambhuva Manvantara, and then again they take birth in different roles in the Chakshusha Manvantara. They do come back sometimes. But then who they are, their role changes. Like Daksha appeared twice, but he had different children, different wives, and his life didn't happen the same exact way, even though it was the same Daksha. And Bhrigu also takes birth twice, in the Swayambhuva Manvantara and also in the Chakshusha Manvantara. But generally, in each Manvantara, there's a different set of seven rishis, and they have different names.
But how to put it together with is that those names, they should be included in Vedic mantras. It has to be a particular name. Otherwise,
well, there's a Bhrigu, but that Bhrigu doesn't show up in every Manvantara. That, you know, you may have to wait. Bhrigu appeared in a certain Manvantara in the past, and he won't appear again for several Manvantaras, maybe not till the next day of Brahma. But still, the history of Bhrigu is there. He just, you know, is not here. He may not be here presently. He is, actually. But, you know, a certain sage, maybe someone we know from the distant past, and there's not going to be someone with that name until the next day of Brahma. It could be like that.
So does it mean that this particular Shaka of Vedas, which has to be revealed through this sage with this name,
it should have been revealed when he was around. And now it's still either it's still around or it's been lost.
So it
can be passed down by his disciples for some time, and then it eventually disappears until he comes back again, until someone comes back with the same name.
So it seems that Vedic mantras, they are waiting until a particular situation which is favorable to revelation of this mantra appears, and then they manifest themselves through this sage with the same name.
Okay.
So that it will be correct with name which is included in this mantra and name of the sages through whom it was revealed.
In general, you can say that the manifestation or disappearance of different parts of the Vedas can depend on material circumstances. You know, the existence of the Vedas and the contents of the Vedas don't depend on anything material, but whether they're visible or not in the material world depends on the situation of the material world and of the people in it.
Mm-hmm. And we can assume that it has to be some particular, like very basic, very the most important set of mantras which has to be revealed in every ages. Otherwise, if we miss some important parts of Vedas, we won't be able to fulfill all
the Vedas are like internet. There's a lot of redundancy. Uh-huh. You know, you could, you know, drop, you know, like the United States tried to wipe out the communication systems in Iraq by bombing, you know, all the communication centers, but they were using internet. And internet, you knock out one connection and there's just redundancy. There's multiple nodes. So the information gets through another channel. Like that, there's so much redundancy built into the Vedas. The same thing said in slightly different ways. There's not much difference between one shaka and another. If you knock out 10 shakas and you have 5 left, still the information is retained. It's just like an internet. Okay, we'll stop here and continue tomorrow. Thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.